Welcome to our first segment of this afternoon's program. It's Sunday, the 6th of March, 2022. It's now 1:33 in the studio. I'm your host, Kieran Murdoch. Quite a few political developments have brought us to this discussion this afternoon. Number one, controversial Labour MP Asset Michael has been successful in court, defending an injunction that he previously secured against the ruling Antigua and Barbuda Labour Party, the ABLP. It was an injunction aimed at preventing the party taking actions against him as it tries to oust him from its official slate and sideline him since his seemingly irrevocable fallout with Prime Minister Gaston Brown, the ABLP leader. The Prime Minister, meanwhile, has reaffirmed his stance that Michael will lose if he runs as an independent and that the party will soon officially conclude its process of designating a new candidate in St. Peter, Mr. Rawdon Turner. Next, the water crisis, as some are calling it, has been a major problem in the recent months. Water is usually never running 24 hours in all places in Antigua and Barbuda, in all communities, but in recent months the problem has been acute. The opposition United Progressive Party has made this a major platform of their election campaign. The government is promising improvements, and so is the UPP. Since water woes are constant in Antigua and Barbuda, however, can either party really claim any high ground in promising to remedy a chronic situation? The opposition Democratic National Alliance, meanwhile, has yet to reveal its slate of candidates for the next election and has asked for patience. Many have found this delay to be a stain on their image and their prospects. Their candidates are not, at the moment, as visible as the ABLPs or the UPPs. And the question has been asked, why not reveal at least a few and generate some discussion? Additionally, the UPP and the DNA have pretty much indicated that there are no solid talks ongoing about any form of collaboration, coalition, or strategic cooperation between the two. And so we ask the question, what will that mean for the opposition in the next election? And I thought I'd throw this one in as well. Works Minister Lennox Weston responded to Asset Michael's budget contribution, in which Mr. Michael said his St. Peter constituency was being neglected, by telling him that he has the finances to improve the area himself. This seems to have been in jest, but we did pull up this clip. Big issues, Weston?
Actually, no investment, but you went over 100 million. So therefore, if your business is politics, and politics is your business, and you can't work over $100 million now, fix up St. Peter with your money. Labour Party give you $100 million, they spend the money. And listen to me, you know, I'm your constituent, you know. So when you go around and give people money, you want to be sure, you know. Oh, come here, say to yourself to run. I don't want to cry in the Labour Party. We are rough and tough people. The PM say that one check and BT, if he bang you off, go somewhere else.
We'll ask our guests for a reaction to that as well. So this segment is about the politics of late and how it will impact the next election. We have joining us all on Zoom Mr. Carla Knight, a political and socioeconomic affairs commentator. We have Dr. David Hines, Associate Professor of African American and Caribbean Studies at the Arizona State University. He's a commentator on political and social affairs across the Caribbean. He's based, of course, in Guyana. And we have as well Dr. George Brathwaite, lecturer in the Department of Government, Sociology, Social Work and Psychology at the University of the West Indies, Cave Hill, former consultant editor at the Caribbean Times here in Antigua and Barbuda. Dr. Hines, I wonder if I could open the batting with you. I wanted to get your reaction to, let's see which issue I could take first. Interestingly, the issue of the opposition UPP and the DNA. I think it's probably one of the oldest stories as we do this wrap-up of politics. But the statements by both essentially saying that, or revealing rather, that there's no strategic cooperation really or discussions between the two going into the next election. I know on this program, Mr. Knight, for example, has discussed what he has indicated would be a sensible move to do so. But they have given an indication that no such discussions are happening between the two. What do you make of that revelation, and how do you think it will impact the opposition standing going into the next election? We may be having an internet issue there. Mr. Knight, have you got the question? Would you be willing to jump in there?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, I think my position on this issue still remains the same, that I think, well, I think it's too late now. Let's just be clear. The United Progressive Party has declared their full slate of 17 candidates. And there's no turning back from that. And so the DNA is now put under pressure to field a full slate of 17 candidates. And I think that that's why you're getting this sort of delay, because they're trying to make sure that they can put all 17 this time around. I think the DNA has to demonstrate that if it wants to be the sort of, let's say, replacement opposition party, it has to be able to say that it's viable. It has people that can run, it has caretakers, it has the sorts of apparatus behind it to be a viable entity. I don't know that it's a necessary strategy, but it seems to be the strategy that they're going for. I would have more preferred them to use the strategy of being very strategic in where they have placed candidates. And we could have seen a much more stronger, I think, front from the opposition if there was this sort of tactical voting. It need not have been a full amalgamation. But, you know, being strategic in where you place your candidates and who, which party goes forward and so forth would have been, to my mind, the better way to go. But that ship has sailed. Now it's going to be a very tricky situation where you're going to have three candidates virtually in every seat if DNA is able to put a, pull it off. And it'd be very interesting to see how that thinning out of the vote will work in the next election and in whose favor it will work. I personally believe that if anybody is to suffer from that, it would be the opposition, given that most of these DNA individuals, especially the top brass, would have been from the former UPP camp. So it's not necessarily the sort of attrition in support there. It's not necessarily coming from Labour, but obviously, as well, disaffected Labour Party people might go towards DNA and not to UPP. So it really depends on if they can put out all 17, what the variables are looking at, and we'll see what kind of performance they'll bring in the next election.
And Dr. George Brathwaite, would you agree with that analysis? And what is your reaction to, this sort of update that the two larger opposition parties really are not, there's really no prospect at this point, it would seem, for any collaboration?
I can agree with several of the aspects that Carolyn suggested. However, I think where I do disagree is that I do not think DNA. I do not think the DNA has to input 17 candidates. I think they can be quite focused and strategic, particularly when you are as much as the Prime Minister would try to attempt to indicate that his party is wholesome. Clearly, some of the rumblings and readings and things you're hearing, you know that the internal cliques are showing signs of cracks. At the same point in time, we know that the UPP has got some momentum going. Whether they can force the Prime Minister's hand in calling an election or whether the Prime Minister will play them out in terms of waste resources, which is the point I had made earlier. So I think the DNA can become quite strategic in the next, let's say, 2 months. They don't have much time, but they can be strategic within the next 2 months. Indeed, the type of collusion that ought to be going on now will be to snatch Asset Michael, because that would help him in terms of financial resources. It would give, it would deny Gaston Brown one of his things in that to suggest that an independent couldn't win. So all of a sudden, Asset Michael will have a party. And there will be, even strong Labour right may cling to Asset, given how there seems to be a personal affection to Asset within St. Peter's. So I think all of those are dynamics that can easily play out, but you would really need to be quite strategic and crafty at the same point in time, because as I say, the Prime Minister is no pushover, and I know that Lovell knows that this is his last mass. So he's going to be coming with all guns blazing as well.
Let me jump in there to ask you, Mr. Carla Knight, whether or not you agree with that last statement by Dr. Brathwaite. I've heard many people say that in terms of Harold Lovell and his political future, that if he's not successful to some degree in this election, different persons have different views, either successful in winning a seat, successful in making some sort of UPP comeback in Parliament, or actually successful in winning the election, that would be it.
Yeah, so before I get to that, I just want to say that I'm very doubtful that Asad Michael would be following John Masai anywhere. I think that there has been long-standing a rivalry dating back to when she was his opponent. So I think the thought of Asad Michael joining the DNA under, as long as John Masai is leading the DNA, and I don't think that John Masai would also countenance that idea, but I do think it would be a very bold move, and it would be a very strategic thing to do, but I can't see that happening given the personalities involved there. But to the point of Harold Lovell, I agree. I do think that this is his last election. I mean, but then people have been saying that since the last time around. Look, I don't mean to, I don't know. I can't, I don't know what's in the man's head. I can't say what he's going to do. I don't want to speak for him or on his behalf. What I do know is that he has to prove himself as a competitor this election. Harold Lovell is in a position where he needs both a seat in Parliament and needs to win the election to prove that he can become Prime Minister. And it could be a situation where his party wins the election and he loses his seat. And that would put us in a very sort of tricky spot in terms of what should happen. It could be a situation where if his party should lose the election, but he wins his seat, the question is, does he go as opposition leader, and to what end? Because I don't see, you know, it makes much sense to put him as opposition leader when the party should really be looking to a new person to take it forward if in fact they lose. I'm not saying that they're going to lose. So I don't know. I think the United Progressive Party has got to begin inevitably, and even if he does win, the question is it going to be one term? Will he lead the party into re-election as Prime Minister? So the fact is that Harold Lovell is one of the most senior, if not the most senior, politicians currently in active politics. That's a very false statement, but in terms of the opposition, I would think. And there isn't much longevity, I'm not being ageist here. I'm saying that a political career begins to wind down at this point. And so inevitably, I think the United Progressive Party has got to look at succession planning and what its future is going to be like in a post-Harold Lovell era, who are its future leaders, and those kinds of things. So I don't know that if this is going to be his last election. I do know it's an election that for him will be Dr. Bradford said, he'd be trying to throw everything he has, because for him, he needs to prove that he can both win his seat back and win the election. You can't be Prime Minister unless you have a seat. So he has a lot of work to do. And it's a do or die election for him.
Dr. Brathwaite, on the question of, I want to move on to the issue of, it's actually a dual issue. The issue of water has been an ongoing issue in Antigua and Barbuda. I know you lived in Antigua and Barbuda, so you would know that. And it has become a major platform for the main opposition party. Do you think the chronic issues to do with water right now are something that is something that is going to seriously harm the government in this election? I mean, we have seen a lot of commentary, a lot of venom heading the government's way in terms of the water problem as it is now. And we've seen the Prime Minister, we've seen the Utilities Minister, Sir Robin Yearwood, and others having to respond in public to suggest what solutions are coming. I know they say there's more investment coming on stream into a new RO plant, but it always seems to be a mixture of problems in terms of the capacity to generate RO, the chronic drought, as well as the faulty distribution network. But how badly do you think that will impact the government, Dr. Hines, or the Labour Party, rather? Dr. Brathwaite, sorry.
I think when water is on the table as a major issue, particularly in terms of not just the infrastructure, but the provision of the service itself, it really becomes a danger. It becomes a weapon that the opposition can use, because that has really broke the emotions of people. We know what water means for life, what water means in terms of agriculture, and we understand even in the bigger picture in terms of the environment and climate change and stuff. So the reality is, and this is something similar to what has happened and transpired in Barbados. You have the chronic drought situation. I know they have put in various plants and they've tried things. The reality is people are not going to rely too much on a promise to do, certainly not from the government, but they are going to look to see how are you really and truly easing the pain at the local level. It is a very emotional issue that, if used well, has some good capital for the opposition parties, and they have to also put their record in terms of what were the conditions, what did they attempt, where did it fail, was there continuity from the current administration, did the current administration improve things or did it frustrate things? And that too then allows another party like the DNA to come with a completely different alternative in terms of being able to access funding, particularly international funding, when some of the major development donors have promised more in terms of things like water, providing infrastructure and technical expertise.
Yes, and Mr. Knight, the question, of course, is always raised whether or not either of the two main parties have any clout in terms of water, because it's been a chronic ongoing issue in Antigua and Barbuda. So, when they start pointing fingers at each other, does anybody really have the upper hand?
Yeah. So this is the sort of danger with that strategy. It is a clear attempt to exploit what is a present crisis in the country, crisis, if you want to call it that, but it's certainly one of the major issues. The state of public utilities is a big hot button issue when you look at social media, when you look at people talking about water in particular. And so it's going to come up in the election, but the problem is there's a credibility issue, because I mean, the United Progressive Party might have had a good chance of winning with that election strategy in 2004, but then in the 10 years to a chip when they were in government, there were public utility challenges that you could argue were present as well. It is a question of which did the better job at managing the utility. Did you get more or less water under the UPP or the ABAP, because I don't think either of them can really say that there was, you know, water flowing continuously from the tap when they were in government. So it's also a matter of saying, what are you going to do to solve the water crisis in a credible way, and for people to really believe you on that issue? So Howard Lovell has got to tell people a very clear strategy of what he will do to bring constant utilities that the government is not doing. And the government has got to, between now and next election, find a way to stem this problem. I think the Prime Minister has been doing that. He's been pushing very hard to have the reverse osmosis plants. I think it's two of them that were becoming operationalized. And I think he wants to push that before any election is called. I mean, so it is a strategy, but at this point, perhaps the only party that has a very clear upper hand, if you want to call it that, or clear sort of clean hands, is the DNA, to say, well, you know, neither of these two people can be trusted with public utilities, because you have given both of them chances and they have not done a good job. So now it's our turn to deliver on that. And I think if the DNA was going to come with any kind of campaign strategy, that is what they would have said. Look, you've tried both of these guys and they have promised and they have failed to deliver. So now we need to come and give us a fresh start, a new party with a new vision. So that there is a credibility issue that they have to address.
If I could come back to you, Dr. Brathwaite, if we could jump over to well, I suppose jump back to Asset Michael. In that constituency, I am wondering how or what you think the prospects are when you look at a race in which a constituency has always voted for the Labour Party, but in this instance, as we know, Mr. Michael is going as an independent, and the Labour Party intends to put forward Mr. Rawdon Turner. What do you see happening there? And because Asset Michael is surely confident that he's going to win.
Yes, Asset Michael is a peculiar character and a peculiar politician, but he knows how to touch the nerve with the people. And I think that works in his favor. I think the more that you see the cracks that I mentioned earlier emerge within the context of either union versus politician or politics within the bosom of the ABLP, and then you see these personalities at play attached to situations, whether it is misspeaking, whether it is charges or attempted charges, allegations. When you see all these things coming, you have to wonder in whose benefit then would the ABLP be functioning in appointing a new candidate. I think if Asset Michael is going to run, I think the ABLP, in a smart move, should actually surrender the seat. And then that gives some traction to what Weston, because I'm sure Asset Michael is going to exploit the little gesture by the minister when he misspoke. That was a misspeak. And you've got to learn how to take advantage of these, even when said in jest. And I think if that can be pinned to the whole ABLP and its approach, then it can spell danger, particularly if you get then Harold Lovell and the NDA exploiting that. In terms of, you made the point that the ABLP has always wanted to see. There's always a first. I mean, Barbados, since independence, the Democratic Labour Party always won the constituency of St. John. What happened? And now they've won it twice consecutively. In St. Lucia, the former Prime Minister Compton, that seat had always belonged to the current opposition. What would be the opposition now? But they lost it. So things happen and emerge. It happens over the long run. When circumstances change, when the internal dynamics of the party change, and when there are frustrations and confusion, either in terms of the political director and leadership, or either in terms of the people's perception, in terms of what they expect, and that gap in terms of what is being delivered. And I think you need to find these openings and tap into them. And that is how an opposition can move from opposition the government. And at the same point in time, they will be pushed. They will be pushed back from the Prime Minister. As I said, the Prime Minister is quite a passionate and assertive man, and he will risk as well.
Going back to you, Mr. Colin Knight, the DNA recently, I believe either one or a number of persons from the DNA spoke about the issue of them revealing their candidates. Now, we know, of course, most of the Labour Party candidates, they're either sitting representatives or they're persons who we know the Labour Party is considering. You know, it's very known, even in places such as St. Peter or maybe All Saints, is it Eastern St. Luke? Where they have not declared an official candidate. You know the names, at least, of the persons who are either front running or in the race. The same with the UPP; they've revealed the full slate of candidates, but we haven't seen that from the DNA. What do you make of that, Mr. Knight?
Yeah, I don't. I suspect that it is because there may be some trouble in getting a sufficient critical mass to convince people that they are a viable entity. I don't know.
Mr. Knight, could
And that is a speculation that I am making.
Could I beg your indulgence just for a moment?
My microphone off?
No. You're good to go. It's just I want to beg your indulgence for a moment just to pause you because we have managed to get Dr. Hines on the line and we haven't heard him throughout. And he did tell me at the start that he might actually have to leave a bit early. So, Dr. Hines, if I could pull you in on this question. We have him on the line, folks. We have the Democratic National Alliance here in Antigua and Barbuda, our third party of sorts. Having not revealed its full slate of candidates, I believe if I understood them correctly, that they have so many people to filter, or they are so much interest that they are still going through that process. But everyone expects an election. The two main parties have almost their entire slates declared. What do you make of the DNA not having a full slate declared as yet, or at least having begun to roll out the candidates to declare that this person, at least in this area, is going to be the candidate and to try and generate some activity and discussion around that?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit unfortunate. As the third party, one would imagine that their candidates would need much more introduction to the general population in the constituencies. And so they would want to get a first jump, if you will, out there. And more than that, I mean, one imagines that they would be running a lot more on issues rather than personalities. And so it would have been very useful for their candidates to be out there and getting their issues on the ground. Because coming after the two big parties, you are then going to be at a disadvantage, both in terms of the personalities, but more important in terms of the conversation. Because it would be very difficult coming after the two parties and trying to get issues on the ground. Because we know that the big parties are not going to be very big on issues in the long run. It would be personality and the history of the party and that kind of stuff. So it'd be very difficult to get ideas on the ground and to get the constituencies and the people there into your ideas if you're starting so far behind.
Well, let me ask you, Dr. Hines, very quickly, particularly as we look at the Democratic National Alliance, I've heard persons comment and say that they sort of debate what the best approach for a party in that position would be. Many people question whether or not the party will have enough support to outright win an election, and many analysts will tell you hands down, obviously not. No, it's not going to happen. It's going to take a few election cycles, right? Now, of course, you do have things that happen in politics, so it's like, oh, wow, didn't expect that. But not many people are expecting that from the DNA. So for a party in that position, how do you pitch yourselves to the public? When you go to an individual and an individual says to you, you know, the individual says, you know, I'm not satisfied with the government and I'm looking to vote for an alternative, but I don't see you as an alternative that can actually make the cut. So, you know, I might as well contribute a vote to the other alternative. How does a third party in such a position overcome that sort of mentality in a population?
It is very difficult to overcome that kind of mentality in the population. If you want to be frank with people, you will have to tell them, look, we are in this race to really lift the political debate, lift the political discourse. Or you want to say to them that we are in this race really to form a kind of informal alliance with one of the other parties or not. But I rather suspect that they are not going to say that. It boggles the mind in 2022. That the DNA is really not in serious talks with one party or the other. One would have thought that they would have been in an accommodation, a pre-election accommodation with the UPP. That's the trend of politics. Look at what happened in St. Lucia recently. Look at what has happened in St. Kitts and Nevis. So it seems to me that the DNA would be in a no man's land if it goes in by itself, because it's going to be very difficult to overcome the big parties, both in terms of spending, in terms of political space, in terms of getting your candidates and your ideas out there as winning ideas. I mean, people tend to look at the ideas of parties like the DNA as very good ideas in an idealistic sense. But in a real practical sense of winning an election, people take a different position. Your ideas are good, your candidates are good, but you can't win. And so I'm surprised that there have not been the kind of talks with the UPP in terms of an accommodation.
All right, thank you so much, Dr. Hines. I know you said you had to go a bit early. We thank you for that.
I'll stay through.
Okay, no problem. Thanks a lot. Mr. Carlin Knight, on the same question of the Democratic National Alliance, very briefly, your view of the candidate situation at the moment. And I also want to ask the question, because while some may say that it would be sensible for them to attempt some sort of collaboration with the UPP, do you think there's a bracket of voters in Antigua and Barbuda who are entirely fed up with both established large political parties, who you can actually reach by simply taking the principled stance that we will not do any dealing with the ABLP or the UPP because they have failed? Do you think there is momentum to be gained through that position?
Yes, I think that there is. The problem for the Democratic National DNA, yes, is that it is not enough of a critical mass of individuals, I believe, who will put them into government. And that is, look, you have to ask yourself, what is the most important thing to you as an organization? Is it that you want to have this sort of a principled identity where you say, I am not going to be in any kind of negotiations with either party because I want to establish myself as a different and unique and fresh and all of that? Or do you have, or do you want a realistic shot at getting into government and enacting policy? Because if you want a realistic shot at getting into government and enacting policy, trying to make it as a third party on your own in this election cycle, frankly, isn't going to happen, I think. And the reason for that is that, you know, people, as Dr. Hines rightfully said, when it comes down to their vote, they're going to look at the options. In as much as they may love your stories, they may love your ideas, they may love your strategies, if they do not see viability, they will not go with you. If they don't see a realistic prospect where you can indeed form the next government or even win, they're not going to give up their vote. Plus, these larger established parties already have established bases that will vote for them regardless. So you're trying to get the swing component as a base. You don't have a base of which you're trying to add swing voters. You're literally trying to tap into just that swing disillusioned component of the electorate that you hope will be enough to win election. And it is just not a sufficient enough critical mass. And there isn't sufficient enough time to sort of break away the established parties. So you really should have been looking at strategic, tactical voting and strategic tactical campaigning in this respect. But I suspect we have a problem in Antiguan politics, and that is personalities trump everything. It trumps politics being a chess game. It trumps politics being a game of tactics. When people have huge personality clashes and they don't like each other, and it just becomes a matter of, I don't want to work with this person because of XYZ reason, then seeing politics as a checkerboard, which is how you really should see it, and is not something that is on the table. And this is why I think Gaston Bon will always have the upper hand, because he sees politics as pure tactics. And we need people in politics who see politics as tactics and not just as, I like this person and I don't like that person. Who cares who you like? It's about whether you can win or not.
I'm just going to play back that clip just to get one last round of reactions to this clip of Minister Weston speaking in the budget.
My colleague, there were no investment, but you went over 100 million. So therefore, if your business is politics, and politics is your business, and you can't went over $100 million, no! Fix up St. Peter with your money! Labour Party give you $100, they spend the money! And listen to me, you know, I'm your constituent, you know. So when you go around and give people money, you want to finish, you know. Oh, come here, say to yourself to run. I don't want to cry. The Labour Party, we are rough and tough people. The PM say they want you, can't beat you, if you bang you off, go somewhere else.
Dr. Hines, your reaction to that? There were a number of interesting statements. I mean, it was clearly I think I just heard the doom. That means that someone on the phone left. So that might have been okay. So Heinz, we just lost Heinz, folks. That was what that doom was. Dr. Brathwaite, then, what did you make of that clip? I mean, there was a number of, as I noted, it was said in jest, but there were a number of issues. I mean, he noted Mr. Michael's wealth, but he suggested, quote, the Labour Party contributed to that wealth. I mean, I didn't know what to make of that, you know, especially given all the allegations against Mr. Michael, which he has vehemently denied. What did you make of that?
I think it is a slick stumble to say that in jest at this time, particularly as you're going into the silly season. It can easily be exploited by Asset Michael himself. It can be exploited, surely should be exploited by her level. And then you have to ask the question, is something nefarious going on? Why is it that the government wants to pass off the responsibility on a private citizen to serve a particular community because they are out of love with someone who would have been part of the bankrolling of the particular party? So it raises questions in terms of the integrity of the very ABLP. If you live in a glass house, you should not throw stones. So it is something that can be exploited. It brings a level of politics. It debases politics in a sense if you flip it on its head. The fact that you have elected MPs, and this is regardless where you are in the Caribbean, you have elected MPs, and if they're not on the governing party, their constituents must suffer. They will not get the necessary infrastructural or services and other works being pushed towards them. They're not prioritized. They're barely peripheral. But yet you're going to go and ask them for a vote. So I think it can offer mileage for us, Michael. It can offer mileage for the opposition, something to be exploited. And as I will end on this, actually, politics is strange and it makes for strange bedfellows. I still think that Asset Michael can do damage to the ABLP in terms of its image by going to the principal Joanne Messiah and her party. So even if they didn't have a love for one another before, they can have a love for opposing the current government, because it is strategic. It is a way to get a foot in the door, and you may become the person that have to broker whoever will become the prime minister. So there are options.
Mr. Knight, what did you make of that clip? We heard Minister Weston there saying, suggesting that the Labour Party contributed to Mr. Michael's wealth. He stated, again, all of this was in jest, but I found it rather remarkable that such statements could be made in jest. He suggested to Mr. Michael, you know, when a distribution is happening, because he too is a constituent, he would like to get his. These would seem to be serious things in politics that are being spoken about rather candidly and in jest in Parliament. But what did you make of the clip? Those are my views. What did you make of the clip, Mr. Knight?
Yeah, so I think it was a clear statement that was made in jest. It was a sort of a banter between them. Look, it's well known that Asset Michael is a wealthy parliamentarian, and you know, well, the source of his wealth is not, it's for people to speculate on and discuss. But the point is, we know that he is among the more affluent members, and clearly the implication was that if you have personal wealth, that you should utilize that wealth to the benefit of your constituents if you want to win your seat. Look, the problem, however, is that as the Minister of Works, public resources are to be utilized for the benefit of Antiguans and Barbudans on the whole. And so Asset Michael is right, if in fact there is neglect of St. Peter's, to say to the Minister of Public Works that, look, the people in St. Peter's are taxpayers. They're not Asset Michael supporters or whoever supporters, they are taxpayers of Antigua and Barbuda, and they have a right to demand that their tax dollars be utilized to their benefit as well. So the people of Parham and Piers and Pitcher's Creek and Vernon's and Gontops are as entitled as any other citizen in Antigua and Barbuda to have their roads fixed and to have their concerns in terms of public infrastructure addressed, and that you should be only concerned with the priority areas insofar as the need, based on the reports that you get from your technical staff of where the worst roads or the most pressing needs are in the country. And it should not be a matter of political gamesmanship to say to somebody, because you don't support me, or because your minister, your member of parliament is personally wealthy or whatever, that you should be in the back of the queue, right? It should be a matter of simply of saying, this is where the needs are. If Parham has the worst roads in the country, we're going to send the people up there to fix the roads as a matter of priority. So I don't put too much weight on the whole statement, because it was said in jest. But the principal point here is that tax dollars and public policy should be driven by need. And we need to get away from this political gamesmanship of, if you don't support me, or if you're on the opposition, or who your MP is determines how the resources of the state are allocated. That is not fair, and it is not in line with good governance standards in the 21st century context.
With that, we can end this segment here. We're a little bit over time. We say thank you to all three of our guests this afternoon: Mr. Carla Knight, political and socio-economic affairs commentator, Dr. David Hines, political analyst out of Guyana, and of course, Dr. George Brathwaite, lecturer at the UE Cave Hill in the Department of Government Sociology, Social Work, and Psychology. Thanks to all three of you for joining us this afternoon, and we can cue the theme and head right into the next segment.